Thanks, David. And thanks, KITV, to give me this opportunity. I'm very glad to give this talk. The title I put on the website is only the first sentence. But then later I realized that I can actually make use of all the four sentences of the poem, which I know. I think everyone knows this famous poem of William Blake. So he says to see a world in a grain of sand, and we are less ambitious. We only want to see a knot in a grain of sand. And I will also, well, a grain of sand is a topological, is an insulator. So another system we will talk about is simple matter. So I don't know how to make that in a poem, so it's just matter in a different doctor. Another one in a different doctor. And actually, then later I realized that the other two sentences following this is also useful for physics, for finite matter physics. Infinity. This you don't need to modify anything. And eternity. A nanosecond. So it's simply telling you that if you compactify the world to the size of the palm of your hand, doesn't really change anything in kinetic matter physics. So all the samples are smaller than the palm of my hand. I mean, correct me if there are some experimentalists. And this time direction is also true, that if you compactify it, and it just means a finite temperature. And a nanosecond corresponds to a temperature which is energy scale of like 10 to the minus 3 MeV. And that's small enough for kinetic matter physics. We can almost just consider that as zero temperature. Okay. So today I will basically talk about the first two sentences. So it's about the story of topological space of matter. And to start with, I will first give a definition. So what we call a topological state of matter. So the most general definition, I think, is a gap state. So you have a ground state or several ground states, and then there is a gap. And then so for a given symmetry class, so for several given symmetries, then you can ask how many gap states are there which I cannot be tuned to each other without closing the gap. So that's what gives you a classification of the gap state of matter. So which means, say, that there is a space of some parameters, and every point in this parameter stands for a special Hamiltonian, which has a ground state. And say every point here satisfies the same symmetry, for example, charge conservation, time reversal symmetry. And then you can ask, okay, so how many different gap states are there? And different means there is a phase boundary between them. So I can have some phase here, which means if you want to bring this state, which is gaps, to this state, inevitably there is a phase transition between them. So in that case, you call them topologically distinct. So that's what we mean by topological state of matter. And if you can identify one of them to be trivial, then you can call others non-trivial. So but the main important thing is you can have a different states which are distinct, in the sense that if you want to, from one to the other, you must close the gap. So this is a general definition, but we can show that it's actually something very generic. So we can even give a very, very trivial example of this. So as an outline, what I will do is, for the insulator, I will show some examples in different dimensions. start from zero, and then similar for superconductors. So for zero dimensions, let's just consider an atom. So you have several electrons on the atom, and say I have a general Hamiltonian for these several electrons. So they can have energy levels, say S level, P level, and they can have interactions. You know they have interactions. So if you write down a Hamiltonian for that, in general you have several levels. So maybe you write, which means you have some electron states and you hop between them, and then you write down interaction states and whatever interaction you have. But if you have a charge conservation, so if the charge is conserved, whatever interaction you have, then you immediately get a situation which we call topological classification. So you different atoms which has different number of electrons, we can, in this definition, we can call them topologically distinct because they all have the same symmetry, they are charge conserved. And if you have one electron in, say, hydrogen atom, and you have the two electrons in the helium, then they are distinct. They have the same symmetry. But if you want to bring this to that, if you want to change the Hamiltonian and change the number of electrons in the ground state, of course, what you have to do is you bring another electron down to the occupied state, right? So to do that, you have to cross the zero energy. So there must be a point in between where having one electron and having two electrons have the same energy. So that's what it means to close the gap. So this is kind of the trivial example of topological classification of insulators in 1D, in 0D. So, we can see already useful features of topological states, like you have to have a phase transition, and also you have some quantize the number to describe these different topological states, which is just a charge, and you can use that as kind of an order parameter, and also so why do we call it topological? Because if you do any small deformation without closing this gap, if you change your atom, say, by applying external field, apply electric field, but you don't close the gap, then the charge won't change. That's the meaning of what we call topological. It means it's some property which is invariant under any small deformation. So of course this is kind of too trivial. So we can go to a less trivial example. So by the way, I forgot to say that, so what I'm planning to do in this talk is, so because there are already several review talks in our program earlier, so I think I won't go to a systematic overview of the facts in this field, like what's the experiments and theory. So what I will try to show is some simple way to understand these topological states in some real space pictures, which means to see how to see these topological states. So so we go to a less trivial example, which is two atoms from one to two. So I have two, and you can, let's consider only one state on each side, which can be occupied or not. So you can think of this as like hydrogen atoms. So I have one level here. Oh, hydrogen atom has more. So we can consider a case where it's like a trap with only one level here. And there's another trap. So without interaction, we can consider two terms in the Hamiltonian. So one term tells me the energy difference between the two traps, whether electron prefer to stay here or there. And there is the other term which is coupling between the two traps. So you can write like I put an I here just for later convenience. But so you have an energy difference, and you can have a hopping between them. So we know that for this such a simple system, and then there is already something interesting you can do. So I can start from the case where there is no coupling between the two atoms, and then I give this a lower energy. Then I have one electron. So the ground state will have one electron here, like completely on this side. So there is a huge barrier. And then I can ask, so what do I do to move this electron to here? Then of course I just lower the barrier, so that if you look at the electron wave function, it becomes a little bit on this side. And finally, so if you also change the relative energy, then you can make it exactly in the middle. Right? So you start from the case. So if I draw a phase diagram, then you start from the case where t is zero. So v is somewhere here. And then you can increase the t and reduce v, so you get this point where it's exactly in the middle. And then I can further make the v to the opposite sign, like this. And then if I decrease the Hawking, if I decrease Hawking by making the barrier very large, finally you will see the electron completely stay on the other side, right? So this seems very trivial still, but that tells me that I can move an electron in this way in the ground state. And if you apply this simply to multiple sites, then that gives us an interesting topological insulator, which we can use as a starting point to understand all other topological insulators. So if you you follow the same way, so consider a chain of atoms. So then, of course, I show that I can move the electron from first site to the second site. And then I can just forget about the first site and do it with 2 and 3, right? So if you keep doing it, then you can move the electron from this side to the other side. So, but if you consider a condensed matter system, which means you have many electrons, not a single electron. So let's consider a system where at the beginning I have So let me draw another picture. So if you consider a case where, like this, so I have half filling in my system. So on average, there is one electron per two sides. And then at the beginning, they are here. And then I can use a similar procedure as here. I just cut the potentials. And then I cut this part. And then move this so that this electron goes here. And then I cut this part and then move this and the electron goes here. Right? So you see that I can move electrons in the whole system in this way. So that is a pumping of the charge. It's just like a pump of water. So you can do a periodic operation in your Hamiltonian, and that pumps the charge. So to be more precise, we can write down the Hamiltonian, which is like a So we can consider two sides as a unit. So then you can have an energy difference between the two, and then you can have Hawking terms like. Which is this Hawking term. So let me call it P plus theta. Just to distinguish from this one, which is T minus theta. Okay, so following a similar procedure here, you will see that if I have a cycle in the parameter space of delta and v, then you can pump a charge. So you start from where delta, for example, delta equal to t, delta equal to minus t, where, sorry, let's start from the case where I have just a v here, and then you can increase the delta like this. Then the electrons will move from here to here. And then when you have the opposite way, the electron finally reached here. And then when you have the opposite direction of delta, which means you have this bond weaker but this bond strong, then the electrons will move along this direction. Right. And then, so after, the interesting thing, the important thing is after a cycle, you go back to the same system. But you know from this intuitive picture that the electrons must be moving, the electrons are keep moving along one direction. So after you go back, the whole system goes back to itself. But there is one electron which is pumped from one side to the other side. So this is a topological phenomenon because we know that after this periodic operation, we can only pump integer number of electrons, right? You count because everything else go back to itself. You do some operation to your system, but you don't change anything inside the system. So of course you can't take a fractional part of the electron from this side to the other side. So the only thing you can do is you take an integer number of electrons, and that is that's what is quantized in this process. And for a later purpose, it will be helpful to have a more quantitative description of this motion of electrons. So for that, we need a definition of a charge polarization. So we know that these atoms carry a positive charge. And the electron. So if you look at the electrons in real space, then they kind of localize here. And then we show that when you do this pumping, it shifts to this direction. Right? It does something like that. So this this kind of position of the electron offset from the positive charge background, that can be considered as a charge polarization. So say if the electron sit exactly on this side, then the charge polarization is zero. And if the electron offset from it, there is a distance, which tells you the charge polarization. So if you write down the charge polarization as an operator. Then it's like this, right? So it's just the electron number times the position, where now I consider this two sides as the same side with two states. Then it's just the electron it's the average position of the electron. So the interesting thing is that this operator, which is the position of the electrons, I can call it the X operator, which is the position. And that we know that position is the derivative in momentum. So actually, you can show that the charge polarization for such a band insulator is a flux in the momentum space, and that's because this kind of localized states of electrons, the precise way to say that is they are these one-year orbitals, which are like the real space wave functions for electrons. Like it's like a generalization of the atomic orbital in when you consider the lattice effect, and these orbitals are eigenstates of the X operator, which means when I draw this picture, what I mean is that this X operator acts on it on some set n, the eigenstate, and this eigenvalue is actually a flux in the momentum space because this is a derivative operator. So the derivative operator eigenvalue is a flux, right? Because the momentum is a ring. So this is a one-dimensional system. If you look at the momentum, it's a one-dimensional circle. So if you look at this derivative on this circle, then there is a shift of this center of mass position of the electrons to the lattice side, and that shift is given by this flux in the momentum state, where this AK is the various connection in the momentum space. So physical meaning of this is just like if you consider a plane wave, electron plane wave with a momentum, then you change the K adiabatically, then the electron will get a phase. And because of that phase, it's like when you think of electrons moving in the K space, then it's a flux. But when you Fourier transform back to the real space, that becomes a position, which means this position of the electrons in the real space. So this formula is the key, which tells us that that there is this there is some property of this band insulator Hamiltonian, which in the momentum space looks like a flux, but in the real space it tells me the shift of every electron away from the lattice side, and you can see immediately that that's nothing but the charge polarization. Right? So the charge polarization will be just equal to that. Because every electron is shifted away from the positive charge, so there is a charge polarization. Okay, so I feel that this is a helpful way to understand not only this case, but also the higher dimensional topological insulators. So the important thing to remember is that we can always, for insulator, in this one-dimensional case, we can always think that the electrons are localized. But the difference between different insulators is that whether the electron is localized right on top of the lattice side or shifted a little bit. So that's kind of, you can say that's an order parameter of the insulator. So of course we know this a long time ago. We know that the insulator has a charge polarization, which is the order parameter. But then we will see in a minute that this leads to a topological classification. So far it doesn't give you any topological classification in that sense. So it doesn't tell me that there are different types of insulators, right? So I have a generic one-dimensional chain of atoms, and for each one, I can calculate this charge polarization, and it can continuously change. Right? The charge polarization can shift. Yeah.
In this example, could you discuss discrete symmetries, parity?
Exactly, that's what I'm going to do, and that's what gives you the classification. So, before going to that, the important thing is that from this real space picture, you see that this charge polarization is something periodic if you don't consider boundary. So if you don't consider boundary, which means you consider a periodic boundary condition, then I have these atoms, periodic boundary condition on a circle. These are the atom position. And then electron is shifted away from it. But you see that if the shift is 1, in lattice constant, then you go back to the same system, right? And that's consistent with this formula because this is a flux of the gauge field, and the flux of gauge field is also only well-defined modulo 2 pi for a compact gauge field. For a compact gauge field. So then, this is the offset with the charge polarization. Then once we realize that, now we can consider to add a discrete symmetry, as what David said. That's what will give me a topological state. So going back to here, so we say that for a given symmetry class, we can ask this question whether I have different topological, different states which I can't bring to each other without closing the gap. So without discrete symmetry, I don't have such a classification in 1D. But now we can include this discrete symmetry. Okay, so now let's introduce the particle host symmetry. So in general, I can write that Hamiltonian as a sum over something like that. So it's just some matrix. And so say if you look at that form, I can write it as a matrix, which is like V minus V, and V so on. So now if we consider a particle hole symmetry, so if I require that my system have a symmetry, which is I replace C by C dagger, each of them, and the Hamiltonian remains the same. So what, and ask what will that give, what will that constraint give me? So then you see that your Hamiltonian has to satisfy like this equal to C dagger. And if you check what that tells me, that actually tells me that H, this commutation matrix H, is anti-symmetric, something like that. So the Hamiltonian is anti-symmetric. So that immediately tells me, so you see that the V term must be zero. Right, so I don't have an onside energy, because onside energy means you prefer to have an electron here or you don't prefer it. But when you do particle hole transformation, the electron becomes a hole. So you don't want to distinguish the electron and hole. So we immediately see that for that simple model, we have a V equal to zero. And more generally, the requirement is that the Hamiltonian is anti-symmetric. And then without looking at the detail of the model, we can already tell that there is a topological classification. It means there are two types of insulators in 1D which satisfy this condition. Why? Because the charge polarization we defined. The charge polarization is odd under the symmetry. So the charge polarization, when you do this symmetry, which I call capital C, with the charge conjugation symmetry. So we know that this P becomes minus P, right? Because charge is reversed, and the position is not reversed. So charge polarization is odd. So that seems to tell me that the charge polarization should be zero for any particle hole invariant system. However, it actually can take two values because of this periodicity I explained there. So when you do if you look at this picture, so charge polarization just means the offset, and when you do a particle hole transformation, it's odd, which means this one will become this, so P will become minus P. But you see that because there is a periodicity, so I can have two possibilities. One is the P sit on top of, right on top of the lattice site, which is P equal to zero. The other is that P equal to 1/2, which means this is exactly in the middle. And if you, when you do a particle transformation, this sits exactly in the middle of the other two. So that's the same system. So actually, in this simple model, you can see that very explicitly. You can just so the example of this two is simply, you can just remove the V term, and there are two states. One is there are two states. One is like you couple the two sides like this, and there is no coupling between them. So there is, that's the case where charge polarization is zero in our definition. The wave function is here, and I consider this as a site. And there is the other case, which is just like this. And then that's considered as sitting in between of two sides. So you see that these are the two states. And because of this general argument, they can't be brought to, they can't be deformed to each other, because they have different charge polarization. And if you want to deform one to the other, you have to change it continuously. Yeah.
Delta also has to be zero.
Delta, no. If delta is zero, sorry, I wrote it wrong. Yeah. Delta doesn't have to be zero. Otherwise, the system will be gapless. Yeah. Thanks. Okay. So we see that we see how this one-dimensional insulator get a Z2 classification. So it's Z2 because it's distinguished by charge polarization, right? So it's not only saying that it's classified class two classes, but also if you have two chains with a charge polarization of 1/2, then they will add together equal to 1, and 1 is the same as 0. So in that sense, it's Z2.
Yeah. But if V is 0, can you still think about localized electrons?
If what? V.
I thought V was the potential that was keeping the electrons localized in sites.
Yeah.
You said well, zero.
Actually, so for any insulator in one dimension, I can think of localized electrons. The question is, where is it localized? So that's the key, which I didn't get a chance to go into the detail, go to detail, that about this one-year function. So for any insulator in one dimension, no matter what's the coupling, as long as it's gapped, you can always find this basis where you can say, oh, electrons stay in these kind of states, which are localized, and they are just related by translation. And they are like the modified electron or modified atomic orbital. So like when we equal to zero, then what happens is, so in like for example in this case, when charge polarization is zero, it sits in between the two sides. In this description, I consider these two sides as one side, which has two states. So I call this charge polarization zero, and I call the other one 1/2 because it sits between the two sides.
Are the ions different from
sites
to the next?
In the case of V equal to zero, I can think they are the same.
In the case of V equal to zero?
V equal to zero, yeah. So like polyethylene, that's the famous example. And polyethylene is all carbon, so it's the same. So,
but if they are the same, how do you have the difference between the two? Because you just shift.
Oh, you mean this one? Oh.
This two
structure.
If they are the same atom?
Yeah, that's actually a good question. So I mean, if I think these two as the same atom, and I think this distance and this distance are the same, then it's just a different by a translation. Right? But when I call this as a topological distinction, there is a topological difference between the two, then I want to call this p equal to zero trivial state, and this is non-trivial state. These are only when you define these two sides as one unit cell. So I think you can think these two sides as two states on the same side. And this as two states on the same side. So in that case, physically, when you look at the boundary, you can't cut in between these two. You can only cut in this case. So you see that there is a difference. Otherwise, it's true that it's not really topologically different. But in the higher dimensional cases, it's kind of automatically given that, I mean, these two are really the same, the states on the same side. So you don't need to worry about that. If you cut the system, it's automatically always here, not here. let's draw what happens when I... So when I change this charge polarization, because we will use that picture. So if you pump the charge, go away from the particle hole invariant point. The particle invariant point is these two points where V equal to zero. So if you pump the charge, then we know that the charge polarization is keep increasing, so that there is a charge current that the electron goes the other way. So the charge polarization, which is the position of the electrons, say when you pump some parameter, you call it theta, then start from, and it's like this. So theta equal to zero is here. And then when you go one cycle, you call it theta equal to 2 pi. Then you see that the charge polarization goes from zero to one. And that's required because your system go back to the same system. So it must go to one. So it must go to an integer, the periodicity. So if we think about the real space picture, what we draw there, so what this means is that there are electrons which are like this, like localized on each left-hand side. And when you tune this parameter, all of them shift to that direction, like this. So when you tune the parameter, all of these electrons shift to that direction. And then in the middle is the case where I have a non-trivial insulator, where this electron is in between of the two left sides. So this direction is the position, because the charge polarization is the position of the electron. So that's the... That's this pumping picture. Okay. So now let's think, sorry, so before going to the higher dimensions, let's try to summarize this several important properties of this topological state. So one thing is that we have a topological environment which characterizes the difference between the two phases. That's just charge polarization. Topological environment. So we always need something like that. So in the zero dimensional example, it's just the charge. And here is the charge polarization. And then we have also some edge space. So the important thing is that when we call this one trivial, one non-trivial, there is an important difference is this one has an edge state. And the edge state means, so you see that the electrons are bonded to the bonds. But there is one side on the boundary which doesn't couple to anything. And then there is no side like that here. So in a non-trivial state, there is a zero mode. And although I only show that in this special case where there is no coupling between the first and second side, it's generic because this particle symmetry requires the Hamiltonian to be anti-symmetric. So the energy spectrum must be symmetric according to zero. So once you have the zero mode, so you have some finite energy mode and then some zero mode. And once you have that zero mode, it's robust. It can't be moved away from zero. So we have an edge state zero mode. And then the third thing is we should have a topological response. So what do we call a topological response is that if I don't look at the Hamiltonian, say this one you can calculate, give me the Hamiltonian, right? But if I have a physical material, what do I do to measure this topological environment? And of course, in this case, we know what do we do. We just apply electric field to measure the charge polarization. And what we get is plus 1/2 or minus 1/2. Depend on whether the edge states are occupied or not. Because when, this charge polarization is defined only modulo 1, so if you only look at the box system, you don't know the charge polarization is plus 1/2 or minus 1/2. But it must be 1/2 times plus integer. So that means you can write down something like effective action, which is the polarization times 2π, basically times the electric field. So this action is just what gives you the response. That you look at the the equation of motion, and that gives me that current is time derivative of charge polarization, and density is this. So this is nothing but some constitutional equations of an insulator. But in this case, you can say it's a topological response of the insulator because the P is quantized in the bulk. So this will tell me there is a half charge on the boundary because in the box P is 1/2 and outside in the vacuum is 0. So there must be a 1/2 charge on the boundary. So this is actually not known as a Boltzmann-Wilczek formula in high energy. So it's actually, if you consider this as a phase, then so in the high energy, what was studied is the case of a Dirac model, and it's actually general for a one-dimensional system.
The edge state, so you need at least Hawking, that your Hawking you have the minus I, so that means your Hawking, you need this like 10 over 2 phase.
That's because my definition of this particle hole transformation, if I really find it, I can absorb that phase. But you can always find a basis where the Hamiltonian is anti-symmetric. That's the important thing for this classification. For all the topological states, these are the important properties which we use to characterize. So you have some topological environment in the bulk, which determines some non-trivial surface state or edge state on the boundary, and there is some topological response property, which means this thing is not only some mathematical environment in the box, but it's observable. Okay, so these are the things that we want to show how to generalize in higher dimensions. And Another interesting thing from this 1D model related to this Gaussian wheelchair is that if you take a continuum limit of that model in the momentum space, you can see that it's a Dirac theory. So like the first thing we learned from this example is a limit. So if you take a delta goes to zero, or delta much smaller than t, and v much smaller than t in this model, then I won't show how to do that, but you can just Fourier transform this model, assuming a periodic boundary condition. Then what you see is that the Hamiltonian looks like there is some sine k term, and there is some, so if I remember correctly, there's some cosine k terms. So this is sigma x, this is sigma y, and the v term is sigma z. So these are three polymetrics. So this is, I'm writing down the single particle Hamiltonian, so it's a h of k. So you see that in the limit it's a Dirac model, because I have a, so if I take this momentum near zero is a kinetic energy term, k linear, and then these are mass terms. So if you draw the energy spectrum, it actually looks something like that. So if delta and v are small, then if you look at this part in the momentum space near k equal to zero, then you see that hk is basically some number. So it's like a Dirac theory, right? With a linear term and then a mass term, which I'm not familiar with. So the mass term is like two delta. And then you have the other mass term. So you see that so these are like two mass terms of the Dirac theory. And when you change the charge polarization, you are changing the angle between the two mass terms. So that is, in that form, it goes back to the familiar problem in high energy, where you have two mass terms in the Dirac theory, and you change the angle between them, you're pumping charge. So I mentioned this because it's actually generic for all these non-interacting topological states, that you have a prototype model, which is a Dirac model regularized on the lattice. And once you can always do it by doing that, you can always reduce to the one-dimensional case and see all these problems. Okay, so now let me go to the higher dimensions. I think I can erase this. So let's look at the two-dimensional insulator. You will see that all the high-dimensional insulators are related to the 1D one, at least when I have a translation symmetry. This is the dimensional reduction, which is used a lot in high energy physics. So if you have a two-dimensional insulator and I put it on a polar, so it's just like this, which means that I just take a 2D system and use the periodic boundary conditions in both directions. And then I have the degree freedom to choose to call this direction as an internal direction, and this direction as my space direction. So it's just a name. So I can consider this as you can imagine that it becomes thin in one direction, although I don't really need that, or I want it to be thick. But anyway, you can say it's an internal direction. So then in this way, I reduce this to a one-dimensional system, but the one-dimensional system has many, many states in each site. So you can count this whole thing as a site. And then there are many atoms there. So that means I can write any two-dimensional systems as a series of one-dimensional systems. So in momentum space, you can write it like this. So I can always diagonalize the Hamiltonian in momentum. So the sum over different momentums. But then if I view this y direction as an internal direction, then I can take this sum out And then
for each
ky, it's a one-dimensional problem.
Right? So for each ky, it's a one-dimensional problem.
And I'm just simply sum over different one-dimensional problems. And so each of these is like what we studied there. It has a charge polarization and so on. So this is just the simplest naive form of the dimensional reduction. And you can see that I can do it for any higher dimension. So with the translation symmetry, any higher dimension insulator, I can consider as many one-dimensional insulators. So then we can use what we learned there. So the interesting thing is that, so now I have a charge polarization along x direction for each of these. And that has a momentum dependence because each ky I have this charge polarization. So now I want to ask a question. So what happens if I apply an electric field along this direction? Then we will show that it actually can induce a current in the x direction, which is what is called a quantum Hall effect. And to see that, because we already have the charge polarization, so you can simply just take the derivative in time, and that's the current in that direction. And you see that, so when I apply electric field in y direction, I'm changing the momentum of each electron. So the momentum increases, so what you get is this derivative in ky. But remember that we need to sum over different ky. So because it's a 2D system, so the current is given by a sum of each momentum. So then you get a sum of different kys, and for each of them, there is a ky time derivative, which is given by the eternal electric field. Right? So this is given by the ey. So we see that the Hall conductance is given by a sum like this. And if you write it as an integral, then it's like a winding number. Right? So it's the integral of t. It's like the dp dky integrates in the momentum space from 0 to 2. So you immediately see that that's why the Hall conductance is contact. Because the p as a function of ky, I mean, p is the charge polarization, which is a function of ky. And if I consider ky as a parameter, I can simply replace it here. So because it's periodic, everything is periodic in ky, by 2 pi. So when the momentum ky goes back to itself, the p must either go back to itself or shift by an integer. So the p must do this or this or this. But in any case, this integral is an integer. That's why the charge, the Hall conductance in 2D, which is the coefficient between J and Jx and Ey, that's why it's quantized. So we see that from this simple calculation, we see that the quantized Hall conductance in 2D is related to this one-dimensional insulator. Right? Because it's basically, you can always think of this 2D system as many 1D systems. So the charge polarization of 1D system is not quantized, but when you sum over them, it must be a quantized number.
Is there any way to get a 1D understanding of the fractional quantum Hall effect?
Yeah, that's a very good question. So basically the integer quantum Hall is when all the states are occupied. So I can, so in this 1D picture, what you think is that there are this 2D system is equal to, it's like a 1D system but with many orbitals. Each of them is like some orbitals which are localized in one direction, localized in this direction, but it's plane wave in the other direction. Because I'm considering each all ky eigenstates, right? So I think the electrons in the system as plane wave in one direction and localized in the other. And when you apply electric field, they all shift in one direction. That's what gives you the quantized Hall effect. That's a lovely pumping argument. And the fractional quantum Hall is just when you occupy the portion of these states. So you occupy not all of them, but a portion of them. And then when you do the pumping, they still shift. If they are still shifting, if they're not pinned by something, some other force, then it's a fractional quantum Hall. Of course, this, the natural thing is how can you get such a state, which is gap, and the still.
That would give you 1/4.
So if you fill 1/3, you will 1/3.
This is related to Landau's original solution of the electromagnetic field, right? Chosen.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
Anyway, yeah.
Exactly. So what I'm showing here is that this basis, which I call the 1-year state basis, which is called 1-year state basis. So this 1-year state. But this is one-dimensional 1-year state basis, which means it's localized only along one direction, and the other direction is plane wave. This is actually the same as the Landau orbitals, which are like has a Gaussian in one direction and the plane wave in the other direction. Right? So if we solve the Landau level problem in the Landau gauge, then it's like the solutions are like this. And when you apply field, it's shift in the other direction. So but the interesting thing is that now you see that this doesn't depend on the existence of a Landau level. So this picture actually can be generalized to all these different classes of topological insulators. You can always think the electrons to be localized in one direction and look at their behavior depending on the momentum in other directions. And that tells you whether there is a topological insulator. Yeah.
Well, I would have thought a big difference between two-dimensional and one-dimensional systems is on the edge. A two-dimensional system has a one-dimensional boundary.
Yeah.
And one-dimensional doesn't. But this seems to require
periodic boundaries. So on periodic boundary condition, you have this story, which is like a pumping argument. And when you have an edge, the same space like this will give you the edge state. Will give you this kind of edge state. So that's another nice thing about this picture. So so you look at this picture. So we are going through this we just show that there is a topological response in the 2D case, which is just the quantized Hall effect, and there is a topological invariant, which is just the winding of the charge polarization, and that's actually the Chern number of the gauge field. And then there is also the edge state picture. So this picture is helpful. So basically this what this tells me that is that say this is KY. So I have so say if a moment if the y direction is a finite, then I have discretized the KY, right? So I have this space for different KY and each of them is occupied. And then if I don't have a boundary, if it's a torus, then all of these, you can think they have the same energy. They don't have to really have the same energy, but it doesn't matter as long as it's occupied. You can think they have some negative energy. So they are all occupied and they think they have the same energy. But then now, if I have a boundary in the x direction, so if I go from the torus to a cylinder, so I have this is the x direction, and then say I have a potential trap like this. And then, so the states here, Each of the states here are localizing x direction, so it's like something like that, right? So the wave function looks like a strap. But you know that if there is this potential, then the straps here will have a higher energy than the states inside. So say there is a potential Vx, and there is a boundary. And near the boundary, so if the Vx is smooth, then roughly speaking, what it does is just give each state an energy, which depends on the position. Right? So because each state has a position which continuously depends on ky, so you see that actually I have a series of states near the edge, which has an energy is just given by the position of it, which is determined by the x, but the x is in turn determined by ky. That's what gives you the edge state dispersion. So you just think that these states have a position depend on momentum, but near the boundary, the energy depends on position. That's why the energy depends on momentum. So near the boundary, this you can replace this by energy in a range near the boundary. Here it doesn't depend on the position. Energy doesn't depend on position. So if you look at here, then you have an energy like this, which is what gives you the chiral edge state. And it's chiral because position depends on ky chirally. So when you increase momentum, position goes one direction. So that energy also goes one direction. So there is a well-defined sign of the velocity of the edge state. So I know I don't have too long time, but I think the important thing is contained in this part of the one-dimensional discussion. So you see that you see that this space, which are localized in real space, and when you cut it on the boundary, then it obtains a dispersion. Why? Just because its momentum is locked with position. So that's why their energy is locked with position. Okay, so you see, so we see how we get all three elements for the quantum Hall case, right? Eddy state and bulk and topological response. So, but of course, these are quantum Hall we already know it, 2 decades ago. But this is a more general understanding that the quantum Hall can exist even if there is no longer level. And this was known starting from Haldane's work, also 2 decades ago. So, but the interesting recent development is we can generalize this to other similar classes, say time-reversal-invariant topological inequalities. So you will see that we can still use the same kind of picture. Because we can think of, we can say that, let's start from the 2D quantum string Hall state. So you can think of a torus and use the same way to dimensionally reduce. And then it becomes a sum over ky, and each ky is like a one-dimensional problem, so I call it 1D. Each ky is a one-dimensional problem. But now the difference is I require I require a time reversal symmetry. So the time reversal symmetry will require that the one-dimensional problem correspondingly have a time reversal, which is like a time reversal will change the momentum so that it will change ky to minus ky. So if ky is 0 or pi, then you time reversal take a conjugate of the wave function, so it still stays in the same ky. So you see that for the one-dimensional system with ky equal to 0 or pi, this h1d is time reversal invariant. So what that tells me for this picture, so now I can still think about this one-dimensional training picture, but because I require a time reversal symmetry, so time reversal is defined like spin up becomes down, spin down becomes minus up, so that's the time reversal for the electrons, and because of that, I need to consider spin. So in each unit cell, now I cannot think about one electron, but it has to have two electrons. And so say you have a wave package for a spin up electron. So I think of these one-year orbitals in real space, right? So say, for example, I have this case. So I have these orbitals. But then I will have the same thing for spin down. And the time reversal doesn't change the position of the electron, right? So there must be pairs of wave packets which sit exactly on the same side. That's different spin. Even if you have any spin non-conserved coupling, it must be still the case because the two wave packets must sit on the same side. Same position. So what that tells me is that if you look at this positions of electrons in your system, which you think these kind of strap-like localized states in one direction, then there must be pairs of them, but only for the momentum 0 and pi. For other momentums, this one-dimensional system itself is not time-reversing. It's time-reversing kind of a partner of the other 1D system at minus k. So what that tells me is that I have a picture, say momentum goes from 0 to 2pi, and for momentum 0 and pi, the states form pairs. So there must be two states which have the same position. And of course there is a periodicity, so they total. And then at momentum pi, they also form pairs. And now the question is how are they connected to each other? So it's like a mapping from U1 to U1. Well, in the quantum Hall case, it's like a mapping from U1 to U1, which gives you a winding number. But in this case, it's a mapping from like U1 to 2U1, but that 2U1, which means the two positions, that two positions has a symmetry, require them to be degenerate. So then you see that there are two possibilities, which is whether they exchange partner or not. So you must have you probably have seen this picture before. So like Charlie, this is first pointed out by Charlie Kane and Yang Fu's work. They show that there is a switch partner, but it's most precise in this picture where I think of the real space orbits. rather than momentum space space. So they cross in this way. So this is the main trivial case, and there is a trivial case. Mm-hmm. Oh, sorry. There is a trivial case. They must degenerate. Okay. So from this picture, we see that there is a Z2 classification for time-resonant environment to be insulated. So basically, it's in real space. You see that when you apply electric field, there is one family of states going this way, one family going that way. And whether it's topological or not depends on whether this keeps going or whether they just do this. And this also, in the same way as the quantum Hall, this picture also tells me of the edge theory. Because if I have an edge, then it's like here, you have a potential. So near the edge, the energy of the states, E. Well, now I don't have. I not only have one orbital, I have two orbitals. So alpha equals 1 and 2, as a function of ky, and that is simply just the potential you put on the edge, which depends on ky, which depends on the position x of this state. So I call alpha equals 1 and 2 with two states. And that is a function of ky. So you immediately see that the edge theory is like this. So this doesn't directly give me the topological response of this state, but it gives me the topological invariant and the edge theory. You can actually prove that this topological invariant is equivalent to Kane-Mealy's invariant that was proposed. So when should I stop? Okay. So then the similar story happens in three-dimensional insulators. In a very similar way, so I don't need to say too much about that.
Why doesn't this picture give you a topological response? Can't you play the same game as before?
I can, yeah. I mean, if I play the same game, I will get Hall conductance of something. So when you apply electric field, one family of states go this way, the other family go that way. So you get some kind of spin Hall effect, like spin up go this way, spin down go that way.
Yeah.
But the problem is that's not a spin. I mean, in general, that's not a spin. So I draw this picture. So if you have a spin conservation law, then you can say spin up go this way, spin down go that way. But in general, it's some spin go this way, some spin go that way, and some spin is not even a conservative quantum number. So in that sense, it doesn't so directly give you the topological response. But you can actually get the topological response by, for example, looking at the edge theory. And the edge theory is derived. So you can say, if I break time reversal, I have a domain wall, and then I have a half charge. This is a way to see the topological response, because charge is left. And so I will just briefly mention the case of 3D topological insulator. I think I only got a chance to talk about the one sentence in that poem. So, so in 3D, well, the generalization is simple because if you look at the crossing, then there are two states cross at one point. Of course, I can think that in 3D, then I have it becomes a Dirac cone. And so in 3D, I have three directions, and I can play the same trick. Consider these two directions as internal. So it's like a one-dimensional cross T2. And then this direction, I can look at the one-year function. So the one-year states are like localized in this direction, and they are plane wave in the other two directions. And then these will still be degenerate at these special momentums, zero, pi. And now you have a four momentum, two momentum, so you have a two-dimensional brain zone, so they are degenerate in this four point. And then it's just a matter of connecting these lines along each of these four lines. So then if you look at a 2D picture, so you have KS, KY as a function, and Z, which is the direction, the centralized position. So you will see that this forms a Dirac cone, a two-dimensional cone. And at the other three points, they cross with the thing at the top. So you have many of these bands crossing, but the trivial case, of course, is they are just decoupled, like this case. But the non-trivial case is that they are connected. As long as they are connected, it's non-trivial. And this picture where you have one connected with the bottom and the three connected at the top, that's the kind of the strong topological insulator. You can also have weak topological insulators. And so in any case, the same argument here tells me that near the boundary, I will have energy dependent on momentum in the same way, which is why like in the topological insulators, we see this kind of Dirac-like surface state. So basically, when you look at this material like bismuth telluride, and you see this Dirac on the surface. So in this picture, my understanding is that the reason is just your electron has a position dependent on momentum. So when near the boundary, they feel the boundary potential. Okay. And then again, so this tells me the edge state, and we don't see directly the topological response, but it actually also gives me the topological response because so once I know this is a Dirac fermion, you can calculate you can consider time reversal breaking and where the Dirac cone will get a mass. So if you write down effective theory, then it will be like sigma xky, sigma ykx, the mass. So if you break time reversal. Then once you have that, then you can calculate the Hall conductance in that way, like the polarization winding, and you will find that it's half. So you will get a half here and a minus half for the other band. What that means is that if you occupy this part, you get a minus half Hall conductance. If you occupy both of them, you cancel it out. So in this real space picture, if I look at a cut, then it's like this. So like this. And then if you open a gap near the boundary by time reversal, that's what gives you the half Hall conductance. So once you have this half Hall conductance on the surface, then that's equivalent to have this magnetic electric effect in the bulk. So I won't go to details of that, but just list the results here. So the topological response is actually given by a theta term. And you can understand that because that gives you a magneto-electric effect. And the magneto-electric effect simply means if you have this chunk of material, you apply an electric field that generates a magnetization. And the magnetization means a current, right? Magnetization is the same as a current on the surface. So that's how this half Hall conductance on the surface gives you a magneto-electric effect. And this is in a close analogy to the 1D case where I have this integration of this theta t dfdt. So you see that you can also have a general argument like the 1D case that the time reversal requires this to be quantized. So I think due to time, that's all I can say. And I didn't give much reference in the talk. The review articles are all on our wiki, so if you are interested, there are several review articles listed. Okay, thanks.